Hello, and welcome to Charm City Checkup, a podcast about social justice issues in the city of Baltimore for pediatric residents made by a pediatric resident. My name is Janie Outlaw, and I am your new host. Currently, I am a pediatric resident in the city of Baltimore, aka Charm City. I am learning about community resources, social justice issues, and social determinants of health that face our patients and their families. Join me as I learn all things social justice in the beautiful Charm City. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Charm City Checkup, a podcast by a pediatric resident for pediatric residents. Today, we will be talking about the Movement Team in Baltimore, Maryland. The Movement Team started in 2009 as a nonprofit organization to serve youth and their families through community engagement. Their work promotes the values of accountability, collaboration, commitment, community, integrity, passion, and respect. You may be wondering to yourself, what kind of resources does this organization provide? Well, let's talk about it. Via the Community Response Team, the organization provides emergency resources during situations like the COVID pandemic. The Wholeness and Wellness Team offers wellness check-ins to Baltimore City school students. And their Healing Hearts Team supports social engagement via community events that takes place at schools and other community venues. Other programs provide life skills and career readiness training, parent workshops, and family strengthening resources, after-school tutoring, juvenile reentry support, and community beautification. All of that to say, the organization has a wide variety of resources aimed at helping the youth and their families in multiple ways. So why is this organization so important? Well, let's consider child wellness metrics to answer that. The Annie E. Casey Foundation compiles data on these metrics each year and considers racial inequalities in their reports. Some key issues identified nationally are that 16% of children live in poverty, about 54% of young children ranging between 3 to 4 years old are not in school, 8.6% of babies are born prematurely, and 34% of children live in single-parent households. Now, if these numbers are surprising to you, just note about 2 times more of these numbers are common in young African-American children. These data points highlight difficult economic, social, and health issues that kids and adolescents face. So we can see why the Movement Team provides important resources working to address these challenges in our beautiful Charm City. An organization like the Movement Team could be a valuable resource for our patients and something to discuss with parents as you engage in shared decision making. So it is with my utmost honor that I have Mr. Akil Trice and Ms. Kia Crowder here to speak with us about the Movement Team.
Okay,
so outside of the brief information that I just spoke about, any other information that you want to tell us about the Movement Team?
Summed it up. I mean, I don't know if we could have asked for a better introduction about the work. If you can get that in 8 seconds, that's our new elevator pitch. But as you said, serving communities, celebrating youth, families, and community, that's who we are.
Good. I love to hear that. And as you all are engaging the community and, you know, providing these resources to our beautiful Charm City children, have you noticed or faced any adversity or pushback throughout the city at different levels?
I would not say pushback at all. The work that we're doing is meaningful work in the realm of it's needed. And so because it's needed, everyone is vested in making sure that families, communities, our children are getting the necessary resources that they need, the necessary support that they need. So pushback, not at all. We have tons of community support. We have partners who share our same, you know, love for our children, our community, our schools. They continue to help us do our best in uplifting these communities and these students and their families. So no pushback here. Tons of love and support. We can always use more, but we get tons of it.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. And the reason why I specifically asked that question regarding pushback is because of the climate that we're currently in and a lot of attacks on some of the social resources that we provide nationally. So I just want to make sure some of our local organizations and things of that nature are not being too affected by that.
So, of course, course, with all of the things that have come down from a federal side, there is going to be some impact that's going to show its face. It has not hit us hard. However, it has hit our schools, the schools that we support, which then impacts the families, the students and the families that we support. The resources that communities and families need are endless. There's never enough, especially in underserved communities. So we're sure that there are going to be some things that are going to start to bud and to show their head that, you know, things that we just have no control over. But with having the community support that we do, having the people who believe in the work that we do, it is our hope that we'll be able to continue to serve in the big way that we've done for all so many years.
I love to hear that. Can you talk a little bit more about some of the schools your team works with, or some of the resources that are provided directly into the schools?
Oh, where do we start? As the lead agency, we support on every level. And that could range from food, that could range far out as needing support and how to stay sheltered. So there are a myriad of different resources that families and communities need in the schools that we support, from a high school level all the way down to the elementary school level. We have families who are just always in need or just trying to uplift themselves and uplift the communities in which they live. Our children deserve every opportunity to survive and to thrive. And it's our responsibility as community to make sure that we give them that opportunity. So with all of our partners, with all of the resources that we have and the wraparound services, we try our best to make sure that we give as much as possible. And if there's a need and we can provide, we do our best to do that.
And you know, you said something about not just surviving, but actually thriving, which I appreciate, because I feel as though, especially a lot about children who come from these unstable homes, they're in a survival mode. So the fact that your team provides these resources and have these outreach programs to help them to actually thrive is so important for the livelihood and longevity of our children.
When we have parents send us messages via social media that says, whatever you're doing, it's working, that's the impact. That's the power that we want to continue to put out there for the work that we're doing, for the programs that we're offering to young people, whether it's myself and Akil or somebody from our team being able to support a young person. That's our goal, is to give them what we have. And it doesn't matter if it's a team member or if it's one of us. We are out and we're supporting and doing the work just as much as our team is doing, mm-hmm. You know, making sure that we give all of us and mm-hmm. we do just as much as the team do. So you will see our faces doing the work just as much as the team members that we have that are in the schools or in on the street or working with youth. They don't just know that mentor, that specialist that they're working with. They know who we are as well.
Yes. And I have seen that with my own eyes, Charm City Checkuppers. So yes, this is the team that you want to be connected with. You want to know who they are, what they're doing, so that we can provide these resources and let our patients and family know about the movement team. So the next question that I have, has your team followed up on the success of some of the families and students? I know you just spoke about how parents have been reaching out saying, keep doing what you're doing. Do you have any success stories that you would like to share with us?
That's a non-negotiable for a follow-up. You can't service the child without servicing the family. You can't say that you're servicing a whole child without making sure that the family is feeling and they're getting the benefit of what it is that you're doing for the young person as well. So we make sure that not only do we connect with that student, that young person in the community, but we also check in with the family to see what those needs are. Because a lot of times the student is struggling, the young person is struggling as a result of something that's going on at home. And we have parents that will come and say, thank you. We just needed an extra push, whether it was a bag of groceries, whether it was just help getting school supplies or getting that haircut or that pair of sneakers that they couldn't provide for their young person. We try to make sure that we give the support and we understand what the needs of that family is, not just saying we're going to just go and do this work with this young person. We're going to find out what the family needs. We're going to push all the way in. You're going to say, get out of our house because we don't want you here. But we're going to give all the work and all the business. And our team, they're powerful. You know, they're getting the phone calls too. It's not just phone calls coming to the office or coming to myself or Akil. Our team members are getting these phone calls at 12 o'clock at night because of the work that we're doing specifically with our DJS students. So.
Well, we got kids that we started to deal with in elementary school that are now graduating college that always come back.
Yeah.
So, you know, we stay with our kids. The kids know that we're a resource, mm-hmm. no matter how old you are. Once you're with us, you stay with us.
I love that. Now, from your team's perspective, what is the biggest issue that young people are facing in Baltimore?
Woo.
Heavy question.
You know, I think, and you was a part of that panel at the marijuana issue, like, it's really, like, hurting a lot of our kids. You know, you just don't know how to help them because they don't understand that someone may be addicted to it. They don't understand how to use it. It has a lot of benefits, but it's just like it's hurting our kids. It's a certain way you have to be, what, 18 years or older? Mm-hmm. We got kids in middle school that's getting addicted to marijuana, man. And it's really hurting our kids because they can't focus in the classroom under influence and they don't know how much to take and how much not to take. So we're struggling in that manner when it comes to the marijuana piece. Yeah. I'll say it's number one for me.
It absolutely is number one. You know, our kids are victims of what society is saying is okay today. And it's not okay. They have not been taught how to do things in moderation. They have not been taught how to discern whether or not this is something that is good for me, for my being or not. So there are so many different pieces that the marijuana usage does for our young people. And it shouldn't be. We need to educate our young people. You lifted in the CEO talks that we did with the young people what the effects.
Yes, on the developing brain.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that was so powerful. And to see it in action, because we have a student in a school that I actually got to see that firsthand, what it does to the student, what it does to the young person. And to know that this is something that's rampant across our community and that our young people are continuing to fall victim to. And so while they say this is something that they're doing because they want to, is it really? Do they know the ramifications of what it is that they're doing? They don't. They don't understand it. Their brains haven't even matured enough to do so. And then with the usage, it continues to deteriorate and not allow for them to reach the full capacity of their brain functions and understanding what it is that they should be doing as they grow into a young adult.
And I think one more thing is the access to weapons. It's so many guns on our streets and young kids have access to weapons. You know, we talking about far as elementary, middle school. Do you know that the young lady had access to a gun and made a mistake and shot herself and she's no longer here. So I do think education around firearms and just making sure that we hold people accountable for getting firearms in the hands of children.
But I will tell you something that I saw yesterday is social media is ripping through our schools with these young people. I saw a student have withdrawals from not having their phone yesterday and acted out in a way that was unbelievable to me. Him simply saying, I need my phone. I want my phone. And he really lashed out. It was traumatizing to him.
I'm just so surprised that a lot of students have their phone in the schools because growing up, we weren't able or allowed to have phones in school.
But we didn't have phones when I was in school.
Ooh, AJ is telling me. I just say it.
Well, but yeah.
Years later, when they're in school and their phone is being taken away, they act out in the way that you witnessed yesterday. It's a very scary time that we're going in. And I always ask myself, I don't have children yet, but I ask myself, you know, when I do have children, am I going to allow them to have these tablets? It's kind of a back and forth conversation with myself because I don't want my child to be behind when it comes to technology because we are in the technology era. But I also want them to be able to communicate and interact and be a being without these constant simulations of tablets and phones in front of their face.
I think there is absolutely responsible use of electronic. You just have to regulate. You have to be involved. Our children aren't even, they don't know how to be social anymore because of technology.
And another thing with social media, I feel that a lot of people, whether it be children to adults, they compare themselves a lot to these other profiles that they see on social media. And as a result of that, and I haven't specifically looked at this data, but I would say that that's probably a higher rate of mental health issues secondary to this constant comparison from social media.
I would love to see the data on that. And I'm sure that it is some strong data that supports exactly what you just said.
Well, I'll go back to parenting. Just making sure you're aware of what your kid's doing, what they're looking at. That's all, man. But, you know, parents are quick to put that tablet, that phone in their hand and say, listen, as long as you quiet, not asking me for anything, listen, yeah. We good.
And I know the movement team really focuses on the children and supporting their families, but have you all heard of any resources for parenting classes that's available for our parents?
Parenting classes have to be disguised. No one wants to be told that they need help raising their kids. You know, what is the verbiage? What is the thing that you specifically want to work with that parent to help them navigate different, to help them move different when it comes to working with their child? And some of the things that we're talking about today, you know, when it comes to adverse childhood experiences, when we're talking about trauma-informed care, when we're talking about restorativeness, let's start there. Let's make sure that the parents are abreast of all the things that the schools are saying, these are the resources, what does wellness look like? Educate the parents on that. That becomes your most powerful tool. I can tell you, when I did trauma-informed care training and I started to learn about epigenetics, it changed my life. So, you know, helping them understand that is the first step for me to getting parents to understand what parenting looks like, because it's a broad picture, you know, and it's a whole lot that can come under that. What are you saying I'm doing wrong and what should I do about it? Right? Questions come with that. So let's go with the basics. Let's teach them how to restore relationships. Let's teach them the life skills cycle starts all over again when it comes to parenting, in my opinion. You have to teach what self-awareness looks like in that parent, not just that child. What does anger management look like in that parent and that child? So all of those things for me are how you help to parent, because you're teaching them coping skills in order to get further with the development of their children and with themselves.
To add to that, it takes resources to be able to tell a parent how to run a household. You don't really know what that parent's going through, how they behind their bills, mental health issues, and you telling them they should practice this. I don't have no food in my house, right? How gas and electric bills get talked about. We don't have no heat. So to really make an impact on families, you got to come with resources. And they'll listen to you. If you help me through my situation, I trust you enough to allow you to come into my house and help better our situation.
That is very much so true. And that's a great gateway into my next question. And how can we as pediatricians expand our support beyond the clinical setting?
You know, we believe that through the schools that we can touch so many lives. So mm-hmm. If we go into school and we deal with children of families that's in adverse situations, them families begin to trust us. And we can go inside these homes and see where the resources are needed, and we can provide more resources. I think if more pediatric professionals go inside schools and start helping schools, I think it'll better suit children that way.
I couldn't agree with that more. One of the things that we do very well is experience and exposure. We have exposed a lot of, whether it's city leaders, school leaders, to the community in which they serve. What does it look like when you as a professional, a pediatric professional, you go into the homes, the schools, the spaces where the young people that you serve are, to understand them from a different lens, not just from your office lens, but from a community lens, to see what they're struggling with and what that looks like. And so a lot of times we all know what the problem is, but do we have solutions to what those problems are? And as a pediatric professional, you know, going in, seeing it firsthand, touching it, the textbook tells us one thing, that experience that we see when we're touching them gives us something totally different.
But it also allows them to have access to you. They see young doctors such as yourself, and you inspire so many people. You understand what I'm saying? Because when they think of doctors, they think of someone that's like kind of like straightforward. You know, you can reach them on all levels, you know? So, and we know there's plenty of people in your profession that can do so. I just think that let's go where the needs are. You know, we talking about reading, test scores are down, math down. Why not start in schools? You understand what I'm saying? So I just think offer what you can offer and help out schools, because now even next year, schools are hurting. The budgets are being cut so bad, they have to pick and choose whether they can get an assistant principal to no fault of their own. So I think starting to push in schools is the best way.
All right. And then what are some of the best ways to share your resources with the families that we serve as pediatric providers?
Right now, we are serving based on the community schools in which we support. We are in a number of schools throughout Baltimore City, and those schools have access to us and to our resources. So while we have a lot of structured program, most of our structured program is through schools, because we are a lead agency for community schools. We are also a lead agency for DJS students coming out of detention to help support them in a bigger way, and enrichment programming for out-of-school time programming to include now a newer bucket that we support, which is youth-based violence. So again, you know, we're here. I respond to people all the time who hit us on social media, who put in inquiries on the website. And if it's a resource that we can provide, we provide it. But our primary resources go to the community partners that we have that we go into, whether it's schools or community-based organizations that we support.
But we also take pride in helping other grassroots organizations reach the platform kids they need. So, and I would say this to you, that we are willing to work with pediatric professions to make sure that they have a platform as well. So they don't have to try to figure out how to work with schools. We're here. Use us. We have numerous initiatives that we do all the time. So let's get together. Let's start one.
Yes, the village.
Yeah, let's push in. So we open our arms and say, let's do it.
Together, we are better.
All right.
What are some upcoming events that we as providers or we should know about to share with our families?
We have an initiative right now going on where we're going to 10 schools. And this is Appreciation Day from Baltimore City Public Schools and their partners to really just support the administration and the teachers. Everyone stressed out. Students are feeling it. They feel like they're not loved. So we are pushing in 10 schools. We are doing a conversation about violence. We are celebrating kids every cafeteria period. We're doing TikTok challenges. We're doing rap, giveaway TVs and all kind of stuff like that. Someone from either the CEO or someone from administration is going out to schools and they say, listen, we appreciate you. Mm-hmm. Teachers, staff, right? Administration. So we're just trying to just be there, be vigilant, and just help kids. So that's one thing we got going on. And Kid has some projects she's working on as well. So
on top of our days of service, we have some anti-bullying programs, prevention work going on. We'll be having some conferences coming up. We have a tour scheduled to reach some schools. The tour we did last year with City Schools was very dynamic and putting out there a message towards anti-bullying. We're also doing some youth violence prevention work as well. And we're doing a conference, being able to nurture mental health issues that our young people have going on, being able to understand their social dynamics. So we're attacking all of the things that we know our schools are faced with in a bigger way, giving some support around that and bringing some light to that. So our goal is to continue to educate as many as we can and give as much support and to support our partners. Baltimore City Schools is a huge partner, and we are a huge partner to them, and they are a huge partner to us. Follow us on our social media platforms. You get to see some of the fun stuff that we do, and it's just a good time to watch it in action and to see other people.
Nice. So what are some of the social media, or what are your social media handles so that people can follow?
So we won't talk about the X. We don't use that anymore.
Okay.
But our Instagram is themovement.team. Our Facebook is The Movement Team. You can just put in The Movement Team and it'll come up. TikTok is also The Movement Team. But our Instagram is themovement.team.
And I will have these handles in the bio as well for the listeners to copy and paste if needed. Any last minute words that you all would like to share with us?
Well, we just appreciate you and all you do and keep up the good work. We just honored to really be heard, right? So anytime you need us, we're here. Baltimore, we're stronger together.
Stronger together. If you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together.
Together.
All right.
We are a Be More community.
Love that. Love that. So again, Charm City Checkup, thanks you, Ms. Kia Crowder and Mr. Akil Trice from the Movement Team for sharing your thoughts and your resources and information with us. And we look forward to improving Charm City together.
All right.
Thank you.
Let's go.
Thank you. Yay! Thanks for listening to this episode of Charm City Checkup, a podcast about social justice issues in the city of Baltimore for pediatric residents, made by a pediatric resident. Special thanks to medical students Juliana Solomon and Olivia Girvan for research and editing. Please follow us on Instagram at Charm City Checkup. And feel free to reach out with any questions or episode ideas by emailing charmcitycheckup@gmail.com. Please remember that all opinions expressed on the podcast are mine and not necessarily shared by my employer. Until next time, Charm City Checkup, have a good one. We'll be right back.